Welcome to Going Out of Your Mind on Vivid Life Radio. On each show, you'll be taken on a journey out of your mind and into your heart and inner wisdom by brilliant and inspiring guests who will deeply enrich your life. And here's your hosts, award-winning authors, meditation and mindfulness teachers, Ed and Deb Shapiro.
Hello, everybody. I'm Deb Shapiro.
And I'm Ed Shapiro.
So welcome, welcome, welcome to Going Out of Your Mind. This is our favorite time of the week when we do this. And we've got a gorgeous person who's going to be joining us today. We know him. We love him. He's done enormous good work in this world. Bill Gladstone founded Waterside Productions in 1982. He goes way back. And has personally placed more than 5,000 titles. Can you imagine having 5,000 books? He represents authors such as Eckhart Tolle, Dr. Barbara DeAngelis, and Neil Donald Walsh, and just so many others who...
And he knows God.
Neil Donald Walsh or Bill. All these wonderful authors who are dedicated to creating books which inspire and improve the world. So he has every right to be on our show, Going Out of Your Mind, because that's exactly what he does with his authors and his readers. Bill, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Thank you so much. So is it Neil who knows God, or is it I who knows God, or do we all know God?
That's very interesting, because it depends on who we all are. But I won't go into that. We'll do it on another show.
I think it depends who God is as well.
She's very pretty. I heard God was, she was very pretty. But what do you feel, Bill?
Well, There's many dimensions of higher beings, and I've got some clients who feel God is actually not the highest of the high beings, because there's the God, and then there's the Creator God, so it can get very complex.
Wonderful.
I prefer the God that knits.
The God that
knits sweaters and...
You're sure you're not just thinking of Grandma Moses there? You know, she was a knitter before
she
was
God
a painter.
Too. So I was wondering, Bill, my interest is that a lot of people say that you never know what a bestseller is, and yet you seem to have your finger on the pulse. You're an inspiration to people who really have put their life work, and this is an area that most people have an idea of, but it's so vast and uncertain. So this whole thing of the spiritual world, because a lot of people say writing a book is very helpful, but you have to do the practice.
Yes. The bestseller category is fraught with misperception. I've been very, very fortunate, and you know, we've had literally over 20 titles that have sold in excess of 1 million copies. Now, obviously, you sell 1 million copies, you're a true bestseller. So why have we been that fortunate? Real answer, I don't know. But partly when I see something that's moving, and many of those bestsellers were at the time when we had all those dummies books, you know, DOS for Dummies, Windows for Dummies, because we started with technical books. But, you know, I saw a pattern, and, you know, I saw a market, and it happened to be a market that ended up growing much faster than anyone could have predicted. And so that was part of the reasons for those early bestsellers. But then you look at, you know, we've had many bestsellers that have been, you know, ranging from Eckhart to, we had a health book with Kevin Trudeau. We had, you know, the current book, the Marie Kondo book. It is puzzling, because none of those titles were easy to sell, actually, or Neil Donald Walsh was easy to sell. I mean, it's one thing if, you know, somebody's already a national or international celebrity, you're probably going to be a bestseller. But our agency actually has focused on people who weren't, at the time their books were originally published, well-known at all. So I don't know what the magic is. I think that I've been very blessed, and I do think part of it is I attract people who are authentic in what they do, and it doesn't mean that everyone who's authentic in what they do is going to become a bestseller, but that may be one of the necessary but not sufficient elements, and then, you know, if you do enough of those, you're going to get a small number that will go on and sell millions of copies. So there's no real answer to the question, but I do think some of it has to do with, you know, being focused, being authentic, and serving a higher purpose.
You see, the thing that touches me, and I apologize for saying it probably a second too soon, but basically what I'm getting to is people put their whole lives into a book, an author, someone, a doctor, or whoever it is, a person who's been through suffering, cancer, whatever it is, their whole life, and then they get an agent, and then all of a sudden the agent goes to a publisher, and someone looks at it and says, sorry, no, and this is someone, they put their whole life in it. Their whole life in the book, and they get rejected.
It's such a hard thing. I would argue that it's not about the book. It's about their life, and the book is reflecting their life, and their life, you know, assuming, you know, they've led a life of meaning and purpose, the writing of the book in and of itself is a positive act in the universe. It sends out a vibration, even if they're the only person that reads their book, to put that information out into the universe. Obviously, from a everyday reality perspective, there's a big difference between a book that no one reads and it's never published, or a book that's self-published and only 50 people read, and a book that is published and reaches a million people. Obviously, the book that reaches a million people is having a much greater impact on the universe, but it doesn't mean that the other book had no impact, that it was a waste of time, or that it's just a lost cause, because the energetic process of writing a book changes the person who writes it. And so who's to say how that change for that person is impacting the universe? So I wouldn't make it this all or nothing, where either you're a bestseller and the time and energy you've put into your book is worthwhile, or I never even got my book published, what a waste of time. It's not that
simple.
Thank you.
I remember also my mother, who is a prolific author, and when I was starting my writing career, I remember her saying to me, you write the book for yourself. Mm-hmm. Don't think about the people you're writing it for. And
well,
that made a huge difference.
Yeah, it's interesting, because in writing school, of course, you're taught the absolute opposite. You write for your audience. Think of who your audience is. And also from a commercial point of view, you know, we encourage our author, who is your audience? It's the first thing. What's your platform? Who are you writing for? But I think it's a combination. I don't think your mother's completely wrong either. The book has to be for yourself, but it also should be focused on a specific audience. If not, you do risk the danger that you're the audience, and then it's an audience of one. And for most people, that's, you know, a smaller audience than they would like. So you do need to balance those two. You need to write something that's authentic and pure and that resonates with your own soul. But I do think, at least as an agent, that the business side of writing is about crafting what you write so it has the potential to reach the largest possible audience.
I think what my agent, you're my agent, I think what my producer just said is extremely important, because a lot of people, when they get rejected or something, or when I talk to somebody, and I guess what he does, because he's an agent too, is that people feel secure and better knowing that if you could write it for yourself and you're pleased, and you're really pleased, that's very good. And if you help others, that's even better or helpful.
Fringe benefit. Yeah. It's a real balance, because in writing books, obviously you're thinking of your audience and who they are, and yet you need to put it in your way, whether they agree or not.
Absolutely. You don't change your message for commercial reasons. Those who do rarely succeed. And I just look at the bestsellers that we've represented, you know, some of them more recently. I mean, Marie Kondo is a very good example of someone who is obsessed with what she did for a living. And, you know, for her, it's really a religious experience tidying up the house. And it comes through with humor and grace and wisdom. And so the book goes on and sells 5 million copies. Neil Donald Walsh, you know, passionately believed he was in a dialogue with God, and a dialogue that saved his life. He was completely destitute at the time he wrote the first Conversations with God book. And on, we have examples of people for whom the writing was an expression of their soul. I really can't say it more simply. And whether those books had gone on to become bestsellers or not, they were very satisfying events for the people who wrote them.
When you say that, What I'm wondering is, for instance, whether it be the energy inside of him. I mean, like Eckhart Tolle, his message. I mean, he's so vast. He's so vast, and his message is clear and simple. But yet there has to be, like, an energy behind him. Like, what makes someone write a book and then all of a sudden blasts and becomes something that everyone can taste?
Well, part of it is the universe itself calls forth. I mean, Eckhart is a very interesting character, I would say, more than author. You know, he's had many opportunities to write, you know, additional books, and, you know, he's told me, well, unless the universe tells me to write another book, I really have no motivation to write it. He did have a very specific inner calling to write The Power of Now and New Earth, and those books were successful not because he promoted them, but because the universe was ready for them. And other people promoted them. Really, it was Oprah that discovered Eckhart and fell in love with his writing and made it into such a massive bestseller. So, you know, things happen when they're meant to happen, and we don't really understand. It's like in Shakespeare in Love, when you have the dialogue asking the stage producer, so how do you actually make any money from this business? And he turns and he says, it's a mystery. And that's true about, I think, almost everything that is organically creative. It's a mystery how things actually work. I mean, when you get to the high levels of Hollywood and the prequels and the sequels and the Star Wars and things like that, you can a little bit predict what's going to happen based on, you know, the success of the last film, and you're kind of doing cookie cutter type things, and you're you know, special effects and this, that, and the other. But in terms of original creative works, whether they're books or films, novels, or even nonfiction, it's very hard to predict what will actually sell. And that's one of the reasons, you know, this is such crazy, interesting, fun business, but very, very difficult to, you know, sustain year after year, quarter after quarter, high profitability. It just is a very difficult business.
And on that lovely, cheerful note, we're going to take a break. We're talking with Bill Gladstone. This is Ed and Deb Shapiro on Going Out of Your Mind, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
Your story is begging to be told, but do you know where to start? Crystal Lee Quibell is dedicated to helping you achieve your book's publishing dreams. Go to crystalleequibell.com. That's Crystal Lee Quibell, Quibell.com, and sign up for Crystal Lee's newsletter today.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
So welcome back to Going Out of Your Mind with Bill Gladstone of Waterside Productions, Inc. And we're Ed and Deb Shapiro of edanddebshapiro.com, and we're talking on vividlife.me. And before the break, we were talking about how really bestsellers are totally unpredictable. I remember reading once the Times Literary Supplement, which is this huge, expensive, you know, put your books here sort of production, that they never actually put books in there to sell them. They put books in there to attract other authors. Is that true, Bill?
I can't say because I don't have a lot of literary. It's a very literary magazine, and it's probably true. I can't confirm it. It's interesting. We're, for the first time, starting to do literary novels, more just because I'm amused and I have the time and, you know, I can afford to do it. I always shied away from representing novels because they're very time intensive and even more unpredictable than nonfiction. With nonfiction, you can, based on the topic and the credentials of the author, sometimes predict you know, that you have a good base. There's a lot of unpredictability in nonfiction, but there's, from my perspective, at least with new novelists, complete unpredictability with new novelists. The novelists that normally are bestsellers are the same novelists year after year. There's very little change. Over 80% of all best-selling novels are novels by someone who is already on the bestseller list.
Fascinating. And so, Bo, back to that eternal question, how do you get on a bestseller list, which we probably covered this in the first half anyway. I was just thinking, because we know so many people who want to write a book, who feel their whole life story has got so much in it that they've got to be able to share it with people. And we're never quite sure how to say to them, you know, we all have a life story, and who would be interested in it?
It helps if they're a famous person. If they're a complete unknown, it's going to be, you know, almost like buying a lottery ticket, because what are the chances that their particular story is going to get out and strike a chord at just the right time? And so because it's like buying a lottery ticket, publishers aren't in the business of buying lottery tickets. So unless it's a famous person and they've written a memoir, you know, just an ordinary person, the chances are that no major agent and no major publisher will pick it up. So
but if they
they're
had,
really
for instance,
restricted
I'm
to
sorry.
Self-publishing, and you know, if they do that, they should be very careful about choosing the right company to do that with, and to make a commitment that they're going to put as much time into the promotion and marketing of their memoir as they did into the writing of it. Because otherwise, it's good that they wrote it, they can share it with their immediate friends and family, but it's not a commercial event.
But as I was going to say, Deb knows of a girl, for instance, a goth book or anything. She was rejected by publishers. She put it as an e-book, and she sold a million copies because of her story. It wasn't like she was famous.
Well,
but
they
she
were
just...
novels. They were novels that were rejected.
But that
by
sounds
publishers.
Even harder. A novel
yeah.
is harder
yeah.
to sell than a nonfiction.
And this is the whole thing I was going to ask you, Bill, because the whole publishing world has sort of changed. You know, gone are the days when you used to have an agent, and then you'd get a publisher, and then you may or may not get, you know, just beginning into the e-book. And now it seems like you get the e-book and then you might get a publisher.
That's true. I mean, in fact, Waterside has, you know, responded to the change, and we now have our own elite e-book publishing relationship with Amazon, where we do about 50 to 60 titles a year, and Amazon promotes them all, and we primarily focus on the Kindle with print-on-demand. And, yes, a couple of those titles have started to take off and will probably end up being picked up by traditional publishers. So from that perspective, it's easier for a complete unknown to you know, sort of make headway and just go ahead and self-publish. But, you know, for every author who self-publishes their novel and sells a million copies, there's literally a million authors who self-published and sold less than 100 copies, because the average sale of a self-published novel is less than 100 copies.
Oh, that's very exciting.
Remind me to send you my novel later.
I'm going to tell all my friends to come to you.
Well, I guess it's because most people don't have more than 100 friends. But
that's a lot of friends. You know, I prefer meditation.
I guess what I'm also always interested by, in the old days, it was your agent or even your publisher who could discriminate as to whether a book was worth publishing. The editorial company and so on will be able to say, yes, we love this book, or no, we don't. But now with e-books, everybody can publish a book and nobody has any way of discriminating. And so it's a very, very different market.
So how do you find an e-book? I mean, as what Deb's saying, I mean, if everybody's thinking they're authors, then you know what that means. Everybody thinks they can play baseball. But at the same time, how does one find a book if they're all e-ing? I mean, it's great that we're with you, but in general,
how does somebody
why would they write an e-book and then say, oh, wow, I'm going to get 100 copies if I'm lucky?
Well, they wouldn't, except that, you know, they're compelled to. They just, if it's something they want to do and they can afford to do it, then you should do it. But if it's the idea that they have a fantasy that they're going to, you know, stop their day job and make a new life as a writer, and they just go ahead and do this, they'll soon be, you know,
in foreclosure. But that brings up for me the question is, how does a reader know with ebooks because they haven't had the benefit of a publisher?
Well, Kindle?
Kindle
and Amazon reviews, yes. I mean, that is the way most people find out. You don't need to be – I mean, there's hardly any book reviewers left. I mean, our whole structure of, you know, the gatekeepers of this is great literature and this won the National Book Award, you know, it still exists, but it's increasingly marginalized because it is so easy to self-publish. And, you know, if you write a book and – 1,000 people go on Amazon and tell that they thought it was a 5-star wonderful book, you're going to make a dent in the traditional gatekeeper because you can't ignore 1,000 positive reviews. So that is, I mean, if you really are one of these unique people and, you know, out of nowhere you've written a novel and it's fantastic and you do self-publish it and you get that kind of response and you get, you know, 10,000 or more people actually buying it, an agent or a publisher will find you.
You know, I have a very big problem, and I really need to ask you. This is perfect timing. Like, I know of one particular, but I'm not going to mention names. But this person, for instance, is talking about happiness. Or, you know, happiness, as we know, it's within us and all that goes with it. And then people are talking about it like it's this external thing, and it's a bestseller. But it's not talking about the essence, the sense of it. I mean, different books don't seem to always be genuine, and then they're bestsellers. And then real bestsellers, which are pure, things that we all touch, they don't become bestsellers.
A lot of it is timing. I once had a monk from India, and before I go into that story, we do have a wonderful book on happiness called Operation Happiness by Christy Ling that Rodale just released that is doing very well, and it is an authentic book, and it has great advice on how to be happy, both external and internal. But the difference between something that is surface and something that is truly powerful was revealed to me. I had a monk from India who had spent 12 years meditating in a cave. He had materialized Lahiri Mahasi, who's one of the great saints of India, teaching yoga.
Sai Baba, that's in Yogananda.
Right. And so he came to the United States. He had been told that his task on this planet was to write the pure instructions for best yoga practices. And he felt, based on his teachings, that Yogananda's people were no longer incorporating the exact right breathing method. So he came to me and he said, and I was told that, you know, I was to come to the West and, you know, you're a literary agent. This is pure truth in this book. So there you have it. My job's done. Now you have to find me a publisher. And I said, whoa, it's not that easy. You're telling me this is pure truth. I live in a world where adulterated truth is much more commercial. I don't think I can sell pure truth. And that's, you know, and that book never was published except self-published. And there's some truth to that, and it's sad. But, you know, we look at it in other areas of our lives as well. It's all about vibrations, and pure truth is the highest possible vibration. Many people, you know, that the old Jack Nicholson line in the movie, you are not ready for the truth, you know, and it's true.
When the guru is ready, when the disciple is ready, the guru appears. But this is a wonderful story with Lahiri, as you're saying, Lahiri Mahasaya and Yogananda. And Yogananda's in this field, and he finds out afterwards that Lahiri Mahasaya was there, and Yogananda says to him, Guru Dev, because he's like his guru's guru. Guru Dev. Well, tell me, why didn't I see you when you were in the park? He said, "Oh, your meditation is not good enough. I was hiding behind the rays of the sun."
Well, this is you know, very much to your point. You know, why do books of pure truth often not sell? And it's because, you know, perhaps that topic is not ready for such truth, you know, in terms of mass commercial acceptance. That doesn't mean you shouldn't
Bill,
write the
I'm going to interrupt
truth.
You here and ask you, because we're running out of time, I just want to ask you one quick question. Out of all the books you've published, 5,000, how many of them have gone nowhere?
Actually, in our case, very few have gone nowhere.
I'm signing up with you, dear one. You're mine.
We're talking to Bill Gladstone. We've just come to the end of our time with Bill, and we just want to thank you enormously. And do give us, Bill, do say what your contact is for people who want to reach you.
Well, the best is, you know, our website is, you know, www.waterside.com. agentsofvividlife.com, and there's different agents that you can find that, you know, work on the agenting side. And I think there's also a link to our publishing program, Waterfront Digital. Probably for most people, our publishing program is going to be more appropriate than the agenting side. I'm, you know, more than busy with full agent roster, and most of my other agents are as well. We continue to hire additional agents. We are still growing, but it is hard to get an agent. And you know,
so waterbank.com?
Waterside.
Waterside. But the publishing, the digital?
Is what she's saying.
It's Waterfront. I think we have a separate site, waterfront.com, for the publishing. Yeah.
Okay, and we're at deb.shapiro.com, and our wonderful radio show goes out on vividlife.me. Bill, thank you so, so, so much.
And it's so good to know you. It's so good to have you
in
our lives.
We'll talk again soon.
Okay, well, I always enjoy being on your show.
Thank
you. Well, you always will be. We need you.
Okay, thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
We all need to go out of our mind at least once a day. By going out of your mind, you will quickly come to your senses. So thanks for going out of your mind with Ed and Deb. Be sure to join them next time. Go to vividlife.me for their up-and-coming shows and to listen to their archives on demand.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.